The sales squad is back in town. Alex and I here for you to help you make your best decision. This time the decision is, should I go niche market or mass market? Some people say the riches is in the niches, but other people say, yeah, but it's pretty hard to find my niches, so it's not that easy. And the other people say, no, go mass market first. You have more total addressable market. Yeah, but I don't have access to the whole market, and it's also much more harder. So let's look at pros and cons of each. We will have a winner and a loser. And at the end of this episode, you can take your best decision. This is why we are here. Alex Lowe, certified strategist, Prince Coach, marketeur, exorbiteur. How did I do? Excellent.
Extraordinaire, I think.
Extraordinaire. Marketeur, extraordinaire. And the guy that I ask everything about marketing, and I, we are here to serve over the next 20 minutes. So I hand it over immediately to Alex for the niche market.
Right, yes. Well, I've been giving this a bit of thought. I mean, when we talk about, and you said before, sort of the riches are in the niches, it's a typical kind of marketing saying, and it makes a lot of sense, because basically your business has, you know, an economic engine. And if you go to the mass market, it has a slightly different economic engine, different profit margins than if you go niche market. So it partly depends on what you want your ultimate business to look like. But if we're talking about picking a niche, well, we're talking about a small targeted segmented group of people. So immediately that often means it's easier to test an offering, because if you know the exact market you're going to, you can test if they actually want it, if there's any viability for your product. Whereas obviously if it's mass market, it can be a little bit more difficult to test. You can develop deep expertise in your one particular niche, in your one particular market. You can build credibility and positioning as being the person to go to or the company for that particular niche, which obviously then gives you authority. You can often, there's less competition. I mean, red ocean, blue ocean, it's often the reason we go to niches in the first place, either identify them or develop them, because we can, you know, we can target them, we can test them, we can find them, and we can create our own space. So the red ocean metaphor is where there's loads of people competing, and the blue ocean is where we carve out a place where we are the one person to go to. And this can also then affect our profit margins, because obviously if you're the one go-to person supplying demand for your particular niche, if you're the only person really supplying that demand, then you can have higher profit margins. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why it's a good idea to niche. The downsides of niching, I suppose, are that there's always going to be a cap to the number of people you can target. So you obviously want to make sure there's some room for growth in the niche you pick. It could potentially mean higher acquisition costs, you know, or if you're trying to target a very specific person, like somebody up the C-suite and there's one particular market you can go to, you have to make sure, can I actually reach them? Do they actually have budget? Is my solution, do they actually have a problem I can solve? Do they recognize it? Do they take ownership on it? Are they willing to actually invest in solving it? Do they have the authority? So there's all these questions, and you can potentially be vulnerable to economic shifts. You know, if you're targeting one specific market and market forces change, well, suddenly it's like, oh, we don't have an audience anymore. We don't have a product anymore. And so that can bring issues scaling.
Have you ever seen a team succeed by going immediately from the first day the mass market strategy?
No. Well, nothing in my reference. I mean, I tend to always work with people who have a specific niche. I mean, it's one of the things I ask when I'm working with somebody is like, who you're serving. I mean, if you have the big players, they've generally been around a long time, right? The Walmarts of the world, or the people who everyone is there, they're just targeting everybody. But even then, I don't think they probably start out that way. They start out as the local place or the place to go for X. And then over time, they just decide, okay, we're going to cut prices to drive the mass majority of people become the preferred supplier. So now I don't know if you can. I can't think of anybody who started out as
I can't
mass
think
market.
Either. I can only think of people who always started niche, either locally or niche, and then added the adjacent region, if it was locally, or they added the adjacent client group. So we are now, if you think even Facebook, which is now mass market, started very niche, very locally, just one campus.
I think you only really discover there's mass market potential when you niche, don't you? Because like with Facebook, it was a college thing, wasn't it? And then suddenly it became everyone had one, but they had to test it on that group. And of course, it could have just stayed at that level and been successful. But you have to, even then you still have to, even if you're going mass market, you still kind of have to find a niche in the sense of positioning. Because even then, so like if you're, we are the lowest cost or we are this, we are that. So like, you know, Starbucks in a sense has that thing about we are your, we're a coffee chain, but we're like your local, you know, we have the velvet couches, we have the place to work. So even if you are kind of going mass market, you still need to have a way to differentiate yourself. So that often starts out as a niche, and then it just proves so popular that it can be scaled up to different branches, different countries, different, it can be scaled up from there.
I see some teams pitching me with immediately a mass market idea, and that is usually a red flag for me, but I'm also the worst guy to pitch something to, because I always find the problems and the things that don't work. But also in general, when I see this very broad approach from the very beginning, and that's why we are looking for this huge sum, because we're going for this huge market, I go, can you show me first that it works in parts of that market?
It's the Dragon's Den question, isn't it? Or whatever it's called elsewhere. It's just like, show me the numbers. Like, how many units have you sold? Who have you tested it on? If it doesn't work in one particular place with one particular bunch of people, it's not going to scale up to loads. And so that's why I was talking about before with the viability. Like, it's often best to test your idea in a niche market and see the viability first. Because it's just like whenever somebody says, oh, my audience is everybody. And to be honest, it's actually very common as a marketer when I ask people, who's your audience? Even very successful business owners, they tend to generalize and go, oh, well, anybody who runs a business, anybody who has a car. And that's when you kind of know, okay, hang on.
Red flags galore. On the other side, there are some folks right now going after Google, like the Perplexities, the Anthropics, the OpenAIs. And there is something to be said about that, because if the niche problem that you're trying to solve is how people search for anything, well, then you have to start globally immediately, because you don't have a segment search. You have search. You're searching for something. Let me search. So what's the one thing that you use? And there's a platform. So I understand also that part. I just wouldn't like to be in the team of OpenAI and owning OpenAI right now, because, well, that is a hardcore mission, and hard to enjoy that.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's almost a different sense. Because I think what people do is they'll look at the mass market of users of a product, and then they'll be, okay, who are the dissatisfied people? Or who are the people who maybe are looking for an alternative? Let's see how we can connect with them and test something. And then they're the early bird adopters. And then after that, if you're lucky, the rest of the people will gradually take off over time. But you still have to locate that niche, that frustrated majority of, like, who are the people in that community who would test another alternative. So even then, you're still narrowing the search to find people before you open it back up. But it's a slightly different ball game.
Or, for example, Enphase right now is going for battery. So the battery systems for every house will need some form of battery, ideally solar. Well, you are now competing against Tesla. So when you do that, you either accept to have the hardest competitor on the planet that you are competing against, or if you can find, this is the time to segment it down and to say, okay, the Tesla battery will be for houses with this five criteria, and we will go for this five criteria that they don't do, or it's too expensive for them, or it's too cheap for them, or it's too small for them, or it's too big for them, or there is another differentiation. Otherwise, why would you go the hardest competitive path first if you can find an easier one?
No, yeah, 100%. I mean, that's just it. It comes back to that sort of economic model again. Unless you have the resources and all the other stuff, or just the sheer luck of being in the right time at the right place to suddenly open a mass market, like when the internet boom first started, or the AI boom, or whatever's coming up. Unless you'll manage to ride that wave successfully, it's always best to find that niche group. But as I say, it does have there are downsides to it. You know, there are things you have to do to kind of protect yourself. Protect yourself in any business, but it's a lot easier to get started and scale up the more you can identify a very specific customer group.
Definitely, if you go niche, it's easier to achieve a high pricing power. And I'm a sucker for pricing power. I learned that from Warren Buffett. He would say, whatever you look at in a business, if you can find pricing power, that is the number one thing that you want to have, because that is the foundation for long-term reinvestment, long-term cash flow, defendability of the prices, competitive advantage. He called it even competitive moats. So everything else is downstream from pricing power. If you can command the price, everything else is easier. You have lower cost of acquisitions, you need less marketing, less ad spend, everything works organically, and you have higher profits, and those higher profits you can reinvest. You have more resilience overall. Whatever happens, you have more optionality. So in the beginning, especially if you're starting out, in the beginning, before you have market dominance, I always look for pricing power. What can we do to be in a strong position of commanding the price versus being a price taker? Now, in mass market, you are always a price taker, unless you are the number one in the mass market already. But when you start, you're not number one. So that's the hardest beginning. It's easier to begin with niche, because in a niche, you can make it so small that you start with pricing power. When you start with pricing power, you can add adjacent loops, adjacent areas, adjacent regions, adjacent client groups. So you work in onion rings, if you want. You add an additional layer, an additional layer, an additional layer, but you are always cash flow positive, you're always in a strong position, and you always have low cost of acquisition, CAC. And you really want to have low cost of acquisition for a client, because that again implies liquidity, risk, all these things are taken care of when you have a low cost of acquisition. And it increases your competitive advantage. It's harder for anybody to attack you, to take market share from you, if you have to spend less than others. For example, Hermès spends 4% of their sales on customer acquisition. Ferrari also. And Louis Vuitton spends 16%. So for Hermès to take market shares from Louis Vuitton, it's easier. But from Louis Vuitton to take market shares from Hermes is much harder. Now, they're both meanwhile in mass markets, but they didn't start that way, and they don't think that way. They think in the luxury component of a given market, and in there they scale it. But they can keep it because they have high pricing power. And the next 3 years, both will go well. But if you think the next 20 years, now we have to look at the cost of acquisitions for each of those, and you know the long-term competitive advantage of each of those in their sector against each other. So my personal preference is niche market any day. And I don't have the experience. I've never run a company that has a mass market. I have advised some companies that have mass markets, and I can tell you, we had a lot of problems to solve. You have the price pressure. In some markets, you are even commoditized. So your stuff gets similar to other stuff. And this is a problem because now the buyer is just looking at costs and 2 basis points of a cost less on the other side, and they're gone. So the next problem that you have when you have mass market is switching costs. So you can only stay in that mass market if you have switching costs. And it's often, and that's also a very hard thing to create, because you can create switching costs in a negative way. You imprison clients by having long-term contracts. They want to escape, but they can't because they are legally binded. And that's the worst thing you want to do. On the positive side, how can you create switching costs? And most listeners right now go, what? Switching costs? I don't have any switching costs. My clients can jump off anytime. So how can you create switching costs? By, for example, creating so much powerful positive experiences during the week that they would miss it already if they jump off. They go, oh, but I'm missing that part or that conversation or that space to do that or that feature. And in order to do that, you have to work on the experience and on the value. The value must be really tangible and really coming on a weekly basis or on a daily basis. Then you have switching costs. Or there is such a high degree of intimacy with the processes and it's complicated. For example, accountants even bookkeepers have high switching costs because you have all this intimacy. You just say one word and they know exactly what to do with it. You just send something over a receipt and they know immediately where to put it. And that is a high switching cost if you have now to explain everything to the new accountant and, you know, bring all this paperwork. At the beginning, the first 2 weeks are terrible because you have to explain everything again until they get to that level of intimacy. So that's a high switching cost. That's probably one prompt to the listeners right now. When you have half an hour, ask yourself this question. How easy it is for your clients to change ship, and what can you create in terms of value so that they don't want to do that?
No, that is important. I mean, that, as you say, that is the thing with niche. I mean, you can do it in mass market. It's more difficult getting that kind of loyalty there, because in a niche market, you tend to develop more customer loyalty. And as you say, with pricing power, if you can command a higher price, higher profit margins, and you can reinvest into the customer experience in ops, into sales and marketing more to acquire a customer, the person who can spend the most to acquire a customer generally wins, because they can become more omnipresent. So like, yeah, if you have that... If you have that intimacy. But it's a thing a lot of people don't think of. They'll spend their money and their time on front-end stuff like traffic, but they won't spend as much time or money on experience. And yet his experience in that whole sort of Seth Godin purple cow thing, is your business remarkable in the sense of would somebody actually remark about it? Is there anything that is to remark about it? So it's like, if you can put a bit more thought into how do you thrill customers, how do you create a service that is remarkable, that's often doesn't take much time or money even, but as you say, then it's like you build up the loyalty, you become the go-to person, you get the referrals, which you don't even have to pay for. It's a small investment of time and money to get a very big return.
Totally. Are we ready to move towards the verdict?
I think so. I mean, I think both of us started with the idea, and I think it's just honed it in this conversation that niching is best. I mean, as a marketer, I'm always going on about niching. I do think mass market has a lot of pros if that's the way you want to go, or if your business naturally is scaling in that direction and the way to grow is just to add more geographical locations, more product lines, more, you know, whatever that looks like, great. But I think for pretty much everyone listening, the more time you spend honing your niche, understanding your niche, developing your reputation and customer loyalty in a niche, the better the payoff will eventually be. And I think from playing both sides, that's definitely where I come down.
Perfect. And everybody listening right now, we hope that now your decision is easier or at least clearer if you go for niche market or mass market over the next weeks. And next week, we are here again with Glenn, and we will discuss, should you invest more into your business or more into assets? So we will talk to the investor in you. While you're running your business, should you reinvest the profits into your business more or into building assets more, or what should be your balance, your percentage there? We'll be here next week, same time. If you have some questions or topics that you need, shoot us a message on X. It's Simon Severino. What's your X handle again, Alex?
Mr. Alex Manns. Yeah.
And we'll take it from there. Thank you, everyone. Keep rolling.
Avoid trying to do thousands of things that doesn't work. We have 274 templates for your business success. Reach your ambitious goals with one-on-one sprint coach. We double your revenue in 90 days.
Business would run well even when you are on vacation. Discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints. How they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order your copy of Strategy Sprints 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business on Amazon today. And if you love it, leave us a review. For more information, head over to strategysprints.com.